Hey Jeff, how's it going?
It's going okay, Steve. A lot of stuff going on.
How are you feeling about the weekly overscan?
Oh, I love the weekly overscan. It's a lot of work, but I find myself looking forward to doing the weekly overscan.
Yeah, no, I find myself wanting to find things to put into the weekly overscan. At first it was a chore, and now I'm like, wait a minute, I just saw this thing. I'd like to put it in the section of the weekly overscan.
Actually, I've been going through and finding lots of things I've done research on for the last 30 years and putting them into the weekly overscan.
Me too, which is really great. I think, yay for research.
Yay for research.
So this is Atari console and computer hidden gems, or gaming Atari console and computer gems. And let's enter the boardroom. You
Let's
ready to
enter
enter
the
the boardroom?
boardroom.
Okay.
We're in the boardroom.
All right, let's start with our news. The news.
Mostly Atari.
Okay, this out this week, the new Atari 50th update. I saw a YouTuber name this Atari 52nd, which is pretty good. I don't know if that's what it's
It
going to be
is the
called,
52nd.
but I like that. I wish I remembered who their name was, but whoever I give you credit, whoever said that. So Atari 50th update, there'll be two new timelines, almost 40 new games, some Intellivision games or M Network games. It's not clear whether they're Intellivision or M Network, but there's a whole new section called the first video game war, I believe, the first console war.
Which goes right in with Jamie Landino's book about the first console war and talking about Intellivision, which was just
Right,
released.
exactly. Space Battle. I was just reading that the other day.
Space Battle.
So this is coming out this fall. It's going to be downloadable. It's going to be DLC for existing Atari 50 owners, and there's going to be a brand new one. And of course, I will buy the brand new one because I will buy it because it's something physical and cool.
Yes, sir. So, any mention of the Atari ST in this list of things
No,
added?
there's no mention of the Atari ST in this list. I think that may be in the 54, 55, 55th. We'll see. Maybe they'll do it in the 56 because that'll be the 40th anniversary of the Atari ST. Oh, no. The Atari ST came out
50
in September
of
1985?
85 of 85, yeah. So
85. So,
it'd be next
wow.
year.
It would be next year, it would be the 50th anniversary. Maybe the Atari will salute the 50th anniversary of the Atari ST and do something for it. Okay.
Would be great.
Some more news. Atari Crypt Update. This is yours, Jeff. What is
Atari
this?
Crypt Update. So, Sam in Monster's Garden is a new STE only game, and I found out about this game. Actually, this is one thing. I don't think it's new. This is an STE game that Atari Crypt was showing off on his site. It's a Dig Dug style game. It's all STE graphics and all the features of the STE with blur scrolling music, etc. It's a relatively simple game, which you can play the video, we can look at it.
Five though.
1995, but what I wanted to do an
Yeah.
Atari Crypt update because I told him that we were going to keep doing updates from his site if he would keep putting stuff up.
Sure.
So, 1985 STE only game. It's impressive use of the features. It's a very simple game. Why don't you play a little bit of
I'll
that?
play a little bit of it.
Thank you. So the graphics and systems are very simple, but it's just cool.
Yeah. It is a cool little game. I like it. The fact that it came out in 1995. I mean, you've got Amiga guys who are still getting, you know, premier games then. And this is pretty much what Atari ST owners got.
Well,
at the time.
There were some good SDE games that came out in the mid-90s. Some of the pinball games and some of the other ones came out. But yeah, this is pretty much, there was...
I mean, this is cool. This is a fun little game, right? It's a fun little game. It's neat to see it. It's cool that Atari Crypt keeps updating his site.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, next one, CV Basic Update. Oscar Toledo has updated ColecoVision Basic 0.5.1. And this now supports ColecoVision, the SG-1000, and the MSX, wow, as well. And now Spectra Video SVI, too. This compiler is very cool, targeting that the Z80 system that it's a precursor to the SMS that the ColecoVision was based on and the SG-1000 in Japan. So this is really neat, a really fun way to explore homebrew.
That's
on
fantastic.
Systems like ColecoVision.
One thing. Z80.
I'm sorry, the Z80.
Sorry, I'm
no.
just kidding.
No, we're
it's
in the,
Z80
we're in the
here.
USA. We're
I
Z. Yeah.
I know. I was kidding. We're here in the USA at Z80. Does Oscar Toledo have a basic for any other systems?
I don't know, but he has a bunch of books that he has written.
Well, I know he has
and he has
machine
a book
language
about this
for the 2600. I just think that someone needs to write a game basic. A game creation basic for the Atari 8-bit and 5200.
Oh, yeah, and I'll just see it, too. Yeah, I would love to see that. That's got to come next. Somebody's got to tackle that.
Now, there is something called UG Basic that I heard about on the Next Without 4 podcast, and that is basically a basic that will export out to multiple 8-bit systems games that you create. And it's very elaborate and can do a lot of stuff. So it's something
it
I'll look at for next time. UG Basic.
Oh, is that like the 8-bit Unity or whatever that was supposed to be
not.
Like 8-bit Unity? That's not.
It's different. It's different than that. This is even more elaborate. It's like a virtual machine, but not, because it actually compiles to each one. It has an IDE and everything. So
Wow. That sounds amazing.
IDE for Windows. It's something I really want to look into. I'm in programming wise. I'm in the middle of trying to get a tile based engine for STOS done from one of our things in the book that we created for Flash. So that's what I'm doing. So UG Basic will have to come after that.
Okay. Well, this is cool. Well, this is CV Basic.
CV Basic sounds cool. I want to look at this too.
This is CV Basic from Oscar Toledo. I'd like to see UG Basic as well. Maybe you can highlight that in a slide next week, Joe.
Next week, yeah.
Okay. Book Club. Here we are. We're going into the book club. Every week we delve into a book. Not always the books that you would think. Sometimes they're surprising. So let's see what it is this week, because you chose it. And it is Replay by Tristan Donovan. I love this book.
Tristan Donovan's 2010 500-page tome, the first real UK-centered history we read. And it helped clarify for us what was in Retro Gamer magazine and the articles we had read elsewhere also. The foreword is written by Richard Garriott. It starts where many books do, with Space War, hits Pong, but then diverges the norm by splitting coverage to UK, like the history of Clive Sinclair, and then at the end has a 369-page giant gameography with system descriptions and a huge bibliography. It's available on Audible. Actually, it's available free on Audible right now, I think, because it's in my library now and I didn't buy it. So.
Wow. I'm going to say something about this. Having a UK-centric history of video games is fantastic. It's like an alternate universe to us a little bit. Actually, it's not an alternate
universe. It's a real universe for us.
Because we lived a lot of it, except the one thing that's really interesting to me is the whole Clive Sinclair thing, the computer, getting the computers in everyone's school and every kid's hands.
Home,
in the UK.
Too, for $100.
Yeah.
Bucks.
I think that you know, there's a good reason why there are so many great game companies came from the UK. And there still are great game programmers in the UK. And there's a whole like cottage industry of game development in the UK, development in the UK. And it's because of this. And I want to contrast that with something. I was just looking today at this Forbes article. Do you remember back in 1984, they came to our school
Yes.
to take a photograph of us using these computers that this company Pertec had delivered to our school. And Pertec's were like CPM systems. And the Forbes came to take pictures of us, right?
Yes.
So that article came out in the summer of 1984 after, and I never read it. And I know Mom had like sent away for a copy, but I don't think we ever got it. I didn't read it until a few years ago. And when I read it, I was like, it was a total hit piece on
right.
having computers in schools. And, you know, the funny thing is our picture's on the front, or my picture, and the guys are talking about how we're all sort of mesmerized, slack-jawed kids using computers. And I'm like, that was the attitude here, yep. was that computers weren't going to help kids. And it may be one of the reasons why we started somewhat behind. You
right.
know, is that the attitude was that maybe it wasn't the thing to do. So I am very impressed with the fact that the UK actually, you know,
every
jumped onto this early.
Every kid in the UK that wanted to be a gamer got, for the most part, a computer. Now, some got consoles, early consoles and stuff too. But computers were the big thing, and they started when the ZX80 and the BBC Micro and things came out, the Oric, started then, which was in the really early 80s, and went all the way through till now. And so those kids weren't just playing NESs and Atari 2600s and ColecoVisions. Some were, but they were playing these computers that started at sub $100 that they could build themselves. And then went up in price for various things. The Commodore 64 went low there and sold a billion because that was their gaming, and their gaming was tied in with creativity and computers right. also. Now here, all of us, who there's probably about the same amount because we have a bigger population, all the kids who had computers here and were doing those same things, it was outside the norm. So
yeah,
you were almost like, you were almost like the told by Forbes that you were a loser if you were using these computers then.
Right.
Right. And that's the difference. Put the US well behind the UK. And I know that they caught up, but it did put the US well behind the UK in having at least the appearance that computers were something that was relative and good for kids to be working with.
And important. Yeah. All right. Let's go to the next. Retro news story of the week. Okay, so if this comes out on July 3rd, which is the goal, but who knows, because it's going to be very hard. It may come out a couple days later. This is a story from July 3rd, 1984, from the New York Times. It is Atari sold to Tramiel, and Warner is going to see a $425 million loss from Atari.
Wow.
From exactly 40 years ago, the New York Times reported on this day that Tramiel had bought Atari.
Now, weren't we on a
train?
We don't have
to talk much more about this.
Were we on a train?
We were. I believe I've looked at it. Yes, we were on it. We were on a train going to the Silicon Valley to visit our uncle, and when this happened, yeah, or at least around the right.
Because
He told us when we got off the train that Tramiel had bought Atari. Yeah.
Wow. And we didn't know what that meant.
I had no clue.
And it's pronounced Tramiel, by the way.
Well, Tramiel, sorry. And also, but what I know he said, our uncle said this specifically, Tramiel is going to ruin Atari just like he ruined Commodore.
Right. He wasn't a big fan.
Not a big fan. He was our one link to the Silicon Valley at the time. He followed the Silicon Valley computer news pretty closely and knew what was going on. And he was kind of, for our entire lives, up until like 10 years ago, he was kind of our like little angel that sat on our shoulder.
Yes.
That sort of egged us on to do technology. So, but I do remember that day when he told us. All right. that's not a great news story.
No.
Retro Magazine of the Week. This is yours,
Retro
Jeff.
Magazine of the Week. Okay, so we're not going to go through all this full magazine. I wanted to go through, though, the first issue, cover, and some of the contents of ST Amiga format. So the ST Amiga format came out in July 1988. So it was basically, how many years ago is that now? 19 from now, I can't count.
36.
36 years ago this month, that's why I chose it, July 1988, a single magazine for both the ST and Amiga, and later on they would also do IBM at some point in here. That was a different magazine. That was the one. The cover is 16-bit beauties, why the ST and Amiga are changing the face of computing. And there's a big article in here about both of them, the prices of them, how much they cost, and how much they cost, what the features are, and it says your choice. So very interesting magazine. I think the Amiga 500 was basically coming out about this time too. And then I wanted to go through just a couple of the reviews that are in here. So go to the next page, Steve. It's really it's interesting on a game basis. So this ST Amiga format has about 10 games reviewed. Actually, there's more than that, but there are 7 main games. The first game is called Interceptor. It's an Amiga-only game by Electronic Arts. It's a 3D shooter. Then there's Virus, only for the ST at this time. Wow. And Virus is sort of a third-person 3D game where you're flying around. There's Outrun for the ST, which is a dismal port, which the Amiga got a crap ST port of Outrun. They just got the same game.
That's a legit crap
ST port. Legit crap ST port. But also, they could have done the ST port better. Thexter, which is Activision puts out a Sierra game that's for PCs and for the MSX. They put it out on the Amiga. Didn't put one out for the Atari ST.
Then now, we did get Thexter on the PC, by the way.
We did get it at some point. Sundog for the ST, which is by FTL, which the people that make Faster Than Light, the game that's just like Sundog, say that they didn't steal the name or get an idea from it. I believe them, but it's a very interesting. Then there's a game called Firepower, which is a scrolling shooter for the Amiga, and then Leatherneck for the Atari ST. So that's the state of gaming. And then there's
lots of
short
reviews.
I really
like Leatherneck, by the way. I played Leatherneck. Leatherneck was kind of like Commando, and you would run up the screen and shoot, but you couldn't see your bullets, so you had to just imagine where you were shooting. I was so fascinated by that game, and then a few years ago, I ran the cheat, so you could just go all the way through, because there's no way to get past, halfway up the first level, there's no way to get past it. So you had to put the cheat on, and I managed to get through the first level, then the second one, and then it repeats. So I was able to see the whole thing, which the graphics are gorgeous. So I love to be able to see it, but I always felt kind of cheated that there's just no way to actually win it. There just was no way.
Now, that's a game where you could plug in the back of the ST. I'm not sure about the Amiga version when it came out, but the ST, you could plug a device into the parallel port and have multiple more joysticks.
Well, maybe then that was the way you were supposed to win, because there's no way to win with one guy. Just no way.
Now, one other thing in here, because it's the first issue, they want to kind of show a bunch of games they haven't covered yet. So they do something called Brave New Worlds, which is sort of adventure and role-playing games. Just 10 of them that they list. Now, one of them we know is not a role-playing game, but I'll go. Beyond Zork, Guild of Thieves, Jewels of the Darkness, Bard's Tale, Lurking Horror, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So a lot of these are text adventures at that point. Ultima 4, Time and Magic, which never came out for the ST, it was only for the Amiga. King's Quest 3, and Deja Vu. And then they also went through the Indispensables. So again, this is the last. So these are the top 10 games for the ST and the Amiga at this point in time. 36 years ago. The top 10 ST and Amiga games. Balance of Power for the ST, Bubble Bobble, Carrier Command, Chessmaster 2000, Defender of the Crown, Dungeon Master, Flight Simulator 2, Impact, I don't know what that is. Oh, I think that's a breakout style game. Oids and Sentinel. And for the Amiga, Balance of Power, Bone Cruncher, Wow. Bubble Bobble, Chessmaster 2000, Ferrari Formula One, Flight Simulator 2, Impact, Mercenary, Sentinel, and Sidewinder, which is a great shoot 'em up. So similar games, not all exactly the same, because games had not, like, the games had not been released on both systems at the same time. But so that's the state of gaming on the ST and Amiga computers 36 years ago. And next time we'll do a different set of computers or systems.
All right, PC-DOS game of the week. PC-DOS game of the week.
So PC-DOS game of the week.
I've gone back now. So we were going into the 90s, but I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if we went back earlier? I used that config from last week that got Microsoft Decathlon to run, and it ran a bunch of other DOS games from 1981 and 1982 that run in like low-res CGA or MGA. And I found this one called Executive Suite, which is actually a text game. It uses almost all text graphics and text-like character set graphics. And it's absolutely fascinating. It's like a kind of text adventure, business simulation, tongue-in-cheek thing. But it wasn't designed for kids. It was designed for business people. And that's the idea weird. Was that you would have this game to alongside it looked like a piece of serious software, and you would have it alongside your DBase and your WordStar or whatever on your desk, and you would play it when no one was looking.
That's
and
fantastic.
It's fascinating. So I'm creating an entire, I have a whole thing I'm creating about this game, but I just wanted to say that this is a really interesting, it's really fun kind of to go back to the earliest PC games and see what they were like what people were trying to do.
Oh, so yeah. The earliest PC games, it's okay. Things that no one really talks about. A lot of people talk about the Atari games, the games on the Commodore 64, even Apple, but not many people talk about these earliest IBM PC games.
I mean, there's a good reason for that. No one played them.
Right.
And or hardly anyone played them because, well, I don't want to divulge too much, but I mean, the PC market at the time was not designed for games, and that's no secret. So, yeah. I'm getting into this, and I will have something for you in a few weeks.
One thing, the last week we mentioned Jones in the Fast Lane. It's not a version of this game.
No, it's not. That's
different, but it's a similar style of game, not text, but it's a similar style.
It's a board
of
game,
to,
actually. It's,
yeah.
It's more
it's
like
very
a board
interesting.
Game.
Yeah. Lots of graphics.
It's cool, but it's not like this. So here's another ad of the week. This is, I wanted to get some Lynx, Jag, or 7800 era content, you know, later.
Right.
So I found this ad, which I really love. It's from VGCE December 1989. This may be the last ad for the 7800. It's got Xenophobe, Rampage, Double Dragon, and Commando. All of these, besides Xenophobe, for some reason, these will cost you a pretty penny if you try to buy them right now, especially Double Dragon and Rampage. They are expensive. But this is a really cool ad that this is sort of, you know, if you look at for the 7800, trying to have some games that might appeal to, you know, the kids at the time, still not enough.
I remember seeing this ad and looking for these games when we would go look at Toys R Us. Didn't exist.
Yeah, and I think finding Double Dragon and Rampage, that's the reason why they're very expensive. I mean, a sealed one's going to cost you more than $500.
Oh my God.
And then anything else, even one that's complete, is about probably between $200 and $300, depending.
I have a loose Rampage.
You're lucky. Still will net you like $50 or $60.
I don't have a loose Commando or any of these.
Actual Commando. I have a Commando. Yeah. But I got it for like $4 in the 90s. So.
Right.
Okay, so that's that ad.
That's awesome.
Now Jeff is going to open a package. Jeff,
something arrived. Something arrived. This is kind of like a crack the seal, but I'm not going to open the boxes, I don't think. I'm just going to crack the seal of this package. I'm going to open.
Let me see what you got here, Jeff.
Box right here. It is from Fulfillment Department of Atari Inc., Azusa, California.
Atari?
I think a lot of people probably have got this. Is
orders?
Atari means Atari's fulfilling orders.
Yeah, this was in our shipment update, actually, that we didn't really do, was that Atari is fulfilling the orders, but I want to know what you got. All right. Oh, my gosh. Ninja Golf.
Ninja Golf.
Hold it up a little bit, a little higher. No, Dill lower. Right there, there you go. So that requires two buttons. So I hope
It
you have a
requires.
two-button controller in there somewhere.
I might. I want really want to open it to find out if there's instructions in
There
here, but
is,
I'm
well,
not
there's
going to right
instructions in the other one. Fatal, yeah, that one.
Fatal Run.
There's instructions in that one. I know it because I saw. So, in mine.
And looky here, something that was not available in the US, they got this with the UK version.
Nice. Right.
The gamepad. This is the two-button gamepad.
Well,
So.
that's fantastic. So Atari finally shipped. I don't know what to say except yay.
I got somebody wrote a message on here. It says 500 plus 503 505 14 8 by 6 by 4. Yes, that's the package size. Okay.
Oh,
All
wait.
right. So we opened a package. Next.
Feedback.
Feedback.
Okay, I didn't. You chose these. You tell me what they're
Okay.
about.
Here's our feedback from the last episode. Here's a long set of feedback and messages from 005 Agima, who's Chris, who used to be on the This Week in Retro podcast. He said, I'm sure the others feel the same when I say that to even be compared to the Retro Hour is high praise itself.
Okay.
And then there's
I love it
more.
because I don't know the difference between the two, so I'm just going purely on like the quality of the show, and I believe they're both comparable.
Me too. I think they're both great. The next one comes from 8-Bit Fixit FN1RO, who I subscribe to on YouTube. And he says, great show. You've brought back must-watch TV for me. Keep it up. And then we got another fantastic episode. And then Jolt7800, I waited for the evening to watch Overscan on the big screen. I like the addition of the retro ad. Such an honor to be mentioned on the show. Man, I hope people aren't looking too close at the big screen. And then
Oops.
Charles Sean 66, nice jobs, Jeff and Steve. First time viewer here. Like Jeff, I listened to the Retro Hour for many years. I found them at the beginning of year two. I liked it so much that I went back and listened to the whole first year. Anyway, so that's our feedback on the last show. I like it. I like
That's
any
great.
feedback on the
I
last show.
get
And if you feedback, it will mostly likely be read on the air.
Yeah. Probably. We'll see.
Probably.
Not if you like yell at us too much, but maybe depending on what the criticism
No, I'd
is.
love to put the mean feedback in.
Yeah, I mean it depends on yeah, actually.
All right,
retro
then.
ad of the week. Okay, this is another one from it is from this month or from June 1976. So that is 48 years ago.
It's a long time ago.
This is an ad for the Telstar, the Coleco Telstar, June 7th, 1976. This is one of the first ever Coleco Telstar ads.
Wait, well, you have to say that again.
This
You
is one
can't.
of the first ever Coleco Telstar ads. But what I find really interesting about this ad is in the small text, it says, Telstar can be played on any TV and it will not damage your set in any way. And why is this important? Because no one at the time had mentioned that TVs would damage, sorry, no one at the time had mentioned that video games would damage your TV. In fact, there wouldn't be a real sort of mass. This is the first sort of video game panic. It came in December of 1976 when the Canadian Bureau of Consumer Affairs, I don't know exactly what it's called, but something like that, issued a warning that video games could burn in your TV set. And
Oh no.
this is in December 76 when those consoles were already the dedicated consoles were already having kind of a shakeout. This did
Right.
not help. And it was
No.
all over the news. It was all over the newspapers. It got the FCC to take a look at it. In 1977, they did issue a warning saying if you did leave your video game on too long, it might burn in your TV. But my point is, this in June 7, 1976, this is almost a marketing ploy that they trying to Combat, the competition, which I believe was Atari, the biggest competition, saying that it wouldn't burn in your TV. I'm not saying no one, but from what I can find, this is the first time anyone ever mentioned the fact that a video game may hurt your TV. There could be something earlier, but I actually sent a letter to Canada, to the Bureau of Consumer Affairs there, for them to look into that exact warning that was put out in December of that year to find out where it came from. They did send me the entire thing, but what I was looking for was who tipped them off. What was the tip off? Was it someone complaining or what? But I'd never found out anything. I had a conspiracy theory someone from Atari had done it, because the 2600 was going to come out with color cycling.
Colors, yeah.
And they were going to announce that in January at whatever Consumer Electronics Show. So this would be all of a sudden, you know, people would see that Atari had a solve for this. That's just a conspiracy theory. But anyway, first time anything like this was ever.
Now, I just looked something
this
up.
This is, by the way, one of the most minute pieces of minutiae you would ever find. So I don't know. I think if anyone would ever care about this, but I care about it. I think it's really interesting.
So $89.99 in 1976 was about $470 now.
Yeah.
So the cost of PlayStation 4, maybe? So the cost of a PlayStation 5 and a game.
That's right. So minutia, but this is the type of stuff we're going to get with the ads of the week. They're not just going to be ads. There's probably going to be some sort of odd little thing in the ad that we try to find.
That's very cool. Right, exactly.
Okay. Next up, ancient video and computer game comics. Another one of these that I find interesting. This may be the last one we do. This one shows Smedley. This one is a guy's carrying a giant computer through a hallway and says, "Smedley, I'd like you to meet the new you." So again, one of these, another thing with last week was the one about the computer, like kind of rebelling against the guy who kicked him. And this one, it's about people's fears about computers replacing them. It's funny because it's only right now that people actually fear this with AI. So the
look
guy
at the anthropomorphic faces on the computer that I think maybe I don't know if he did.
Yeah,
this on
no, you
purpose.
Got to people have to see. No, that's really interesting. There are faces on the computer. Oh yeah, you got to take a look at that on the video version. So this is a cartoon called Off the Record by Ed Reed. Ed Reed was the second artist of the cartoon feature Off the Record that was distributed by the Register and Tribune Syndication. It debuted by artist Carl Kuhn in 1935, was later taken over by Reed until 1984. And he was born in 1907, and he died in 1990. So he was a longtime cartoonist. I like to find out the little history about the cartoonists for these things, because I think most of these cartoons people made were just unsung. You know, they're just these one panels, you know, in the newspaper that no one ever really cared. So trying to give them a little bit of recognition, and especially when they did stuff like this, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, this is great.
All right. Next up, finally, the boardroom debate.
Now, the debate on this is, I picked all these gems, that sort of hidden gems, or maybe just a game I think is a gem that not many people talk about, which isn't necessarily a hidden gem.
And the debate is, I'm going to tell you whether you're full of or not.
You're going to tell me whether I'm full of or not. Right, exactly. So let's start with the first one, Steve. Okay. We went way back.
Hidden Atari
way
gems.
Back. Hidden Atari gems.
The first one is?
The arcade. The first one is Superbug.
Superbug. What is Superbug?
One of the first overhead driving games. It's not really a racing game. Superbug is an arcade video game developed, manufactured, and released by Atari in 1977. The player steers a yellow Volkswagen Beetle, or Bug, along a multi-directional scrolling track, avoiding the boundaries and occasional obstacles. The game ends when the fuel runs out. Superbug is in black and white, and the colored car comes from a yellow overlay in the center of the screen. Now, which were also related to Fire Truck. And I read that directly from Wikipedia. I'm doing a lot of research on this one. We've got to go quick. But I did find the classic There is a video of it on here if you want to play it, Steve. I know you've seen this before. The video I have, and I wanted to pick out YouTube channels to highlight. This is the classic retro gaming YouTube channel had Superbug. And I remember watching this one to make my version of Superbug to test out 8-way scrolling in ActionScript for Flash.
Well, that's cool. I would not going to argue with you about this one. I think that the scrolling environment in this sort of bitmapped scrolling environment is absolutely fascinating.
Right.
So I cannot deny that this isn't a hidden gem.
So
I'm going to go to the next one now.
Standalone arcade. I picked for this one the first standalone Atari joystick we ever played or could get our hands on from Jack's Pacific in 2002, specifically because we knew the guy who created this at Jack's Pacific. He moved from a company we worked at to Jack's Pacific. I'm not going to name him. This was NES on a chip. The games were Adventure, Asteroids, Breakout, Centipede, Circus Atari, Graphitar, Missile Command, Pong, Real Sports Volleyball, and Yar's Revenge. Now, they weren't playing the original ROMs, but because they had the 6502 code, they used that code and transferred over the display to the games, so they play a reasonable facsimile at the time. Very much more than you would expect from an NES on a chip doing Atari 2600 games, especially Real Sports Volleyball. I remember seeing that one and liking it a lot.
Well, this is cool. Yeah, I do remember the guy going there, and I do remember this coming out. I was kind of jealous because I thought it'd be really cool to do something like this. Yes. The NES on a chip, I think, surprised everybody when we found out that people were remaking these old arcade games or just re-releasing them as the NES versions or remaking them. I'll say that I really do think that this era is over and we can actually emulate or recreate the exact hardware.
With FPGA.
Prompts. Yeah, either you can do an FPGA or you can do an emulator, but I think that's way better. But this was fun at the time.
I do want to break this out for a video and see if the games are how close these are now.
It would be good to do a side-by-side, you mean?
Compare them. I think I'm going to do a side-by-side comparison.
Oh, that's cool.
At some point.
That's cool. Okay, next one. The 2600.
I chose Chaotic Grill. And I wanted to highlight another. This is sort of we didn't do a creator spotlight this time because really I wanted to highlight different people's videos if I could. In this one, this is Brian's Man Cave. Brian has a fantastic channel. He makes his own Intellivision games.
He does, yes.
And he's showing Chaotic Grill, which is a very cool new Burger Time game for the Atari 2600.
Let me play a little bit of this. Oh, wow. It looks really good.
That's a pickle. That's a little pickle slice. He's even got that kind of rotating look. You know,
so obviously it's Burger Time. I firmly believe Burger Time is one of the great classic games. Gameplay is just really, really cool. Also hard, but I love it. So this is really neat. And I'm going to have to try Catagirl. Do you know who made Catagirl?
I have it in an entire video that we can point to about me doing all of the Burger Time games across the Atari systems.
Oh, that's
right. So we'll add that in here, and then it's in there.
Okay. Next one. The 400-800. You chose
the arcade machine.
The arcade machine.
Make your own 5-level arcade blaster. So this is basically a way for you to make GORF. It's not, you can't make GORF games, but you can make 5 different levels of different sort of shooter games on the Atari 8-bit. I know this came out for probably the Apple II and maybe the Commodore 64.
I know there was one called Shoot 'Em Up Construction Set, which is a little bit different.
Different, totally different. Yeah, this is that was much more elaborate than this. But this is for the Atari 8-bit. This is the only real game, arcade game making software ever came out for it. You can make a 5-level, and that just means 5 different levels, 5 different screens of gameplay in an arcade game. That's why I mentioned GORF. You create your shapes, your characters, your backgrounds, you create your sounds, you create movement patterns, you configure your game options, you create levels, and then you can create a shareable, bootable game disc. Why there aren't thousands of shareable game, bootable game discs of these types of games like there are Pinball Construction Set, I don't know, but I want to make one.
Can you, I guess my question would be, will the emulator, I know what this is one of the things that I think gets hard with the emulators is you would have to take a new blank disk and stick it into the virtual drive and then write it out to that disk, right?
Right.
I've had problems on the ST doing that.
Well, the reason is that the ST sometimes is set up for virtual writes, and because they don't want you to ruin your disk, but you can turn that off and you can write to the
Okay.
disks.
So this would be cool. I would love to see an arcade game made with this. That would be really fun. So we should
Yeah.
try that.
I want to see a bunch of people make games with this, but
Okay,
okay,
Atari
next up.
Soft,
Atari Soft.
Galaxian for the ColecoVision.
ColecoGalaxian. So ColecoGalaxian 1984 by Atari. And to me, it's the best Atari Soft version of Galaxian. I have another video that we can link to where I play all the versions of a couple different game, all the four or five games that Atari made for the ColecoVision. I compare them to the 5200, the Atari 8-bit, and the 2600 versions. And one of them is the one that ColecoVision wins on, oh, no matter what like machine you're looking at, especially the Commodore 64 too, is Galaxian.
Have
Whoever
you
made this made
seen
a
the
great
IBM
game.
PC version of Galaxian is also really
I
good
know, but
too?
that ha, haven't got there yet. I'm
Yeah.
gonna
So
do
I was
the
playing that the other
PC.
day, and I
Those
think.
are called PC Booter. I'm getting to PC Booter games made by Atari also. It's another video I'm working on, but remember, making second videos to me is really tough at the moment.
Yeah. So I
But
agree.
yeah, so
Atari Soft
this is a good one.
Galaxian across the board. You Coleco, I'll tell you that I think that the one on the PC is really good as well.
That's awesome. Let's take a look at that. APX. So another video channel I wanted to highlight is this is Pete Davidson, whose brother and father worked for Atari magazines in the UK, and when he was a little tyke, he started writing for them too, probably when he was 16
Oh
or
my God,
17.
that's amazing.
That was a Atari User and
Oh, Atari
Page
User.
6.
Remember
And
Page
Page
Six?
6.
I gave you a whole. I bought
Yes,
a
I have them.
collection of Page Six, like the first like 30 issues
They're
or
sitting
something.
right here. They're sitting
Yeah.
right here. I used to read through those. Now I just have them all downloaded too. So Phobos is Caverns of Mars 2, the real Caverns of Mars 2. It actually goes. It's another horizontal shooter going down, much harder.
Oh, I remember this. Is this by
Yeah.
the guy who
By
made Caverns of Mars?
Christensen, yes.
But not Caverns
I
of
think
Mars 2, which actually is a side scroller.
Yeah, so Caverns of Mars 2 is a side scroll scramble game, and Phobos is the same type of game as Caverns of Mars, but it's more a lot more it's much harder but with better graphics.
Okay. All right, what's the next one? As we move along, 5200
5200. This is
Meteorites.
Meteorites, and not just a way for me to show off videos that I've made before, but Meteorites to me was
Well,
one of
not
the better,
entirely.
not entirely, but I'm showing other people's videos too, so don't, come on. I have a video
That's the
here
way to
where
do
I
it. You
throw a
slot in other people's stuff just so to dilute the fact that you're using your videos for half the things.
I want to get more people to see this. Anyway, so we'll show the video link at the top right here, but this is a video where I did all of the Asteroids games on the 8-bits and the 5200, and Meteorites is a very nicely made Asteroids game for the Atari 8-bit and 5200.
Nice. Nice.
And it's color, it's better looking than the Atari one.
For the 520 ST and the 1040 ST, you've chosen ZyBots.
XYBots or
I
ZyBots.
call it ZyBots.
This
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably ZyBots, but XYBots
What
is
do they
what I
call
think
it?
of. The
XY bots
reason,
because it's like kind of first person.
yes, well, also because you could only move. It's like it's 3D, but you really can only move in a 2D space. But it's an Atari Games coin-op conversion, a unique third-person 3D view gameplay game. Lots of fun blasting for one or two players at the same time,
Oh,
with
wow.
lots of warps, transporters, secret rooms, bosses, weapon shops, etc. It's just an incredible game, but it's so arcadey that it's not really exploratory, right? Because they just moved the arcade eat quarter eater over to the ST and the Amiga. Would have been better if they had sort of changed the game a little bit so it wasn't so much about time and putting in more quarters,
That
but
is
it's a
one thing
great
that
game
I'm
that no one
impressed
talks about.
about what Nintendo would do. Like,
Yeah.
if you were going to make an arcade conversion for the NES, you had to do more with it. They were smart about that because the arcade games are not entirely arcade games did not transfer over great, right? I mean, it's but my prime example is Battlezone, which is a great game in the arcade.
Yes.
On home, it's really not that much fun. You just do the same thing the whole
Over
time.
and over again.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, let's go to the next one. 7800, you chose Asteroids Deluxe.
A lot of Asteroids games in this. Asteroids Deluxe is a Bob DiCrescenzo 2007 game published by Atari Age. Not anymore. Oh, no, actually, I think it is published by Atari Age. I think it might actually be the official 7800 version of Asteroids Deluxe.
That would be awesome if it was.
Because Atari owns this. It is a great version of Asteroids Deluxe for the Atari. We even used it to see if the sounds were correct in the Atari coin-op, remember? Mm-hmm. We played it because the Atari coin-op, when you shoot all of the aliens in the little wedge, it makes that...
And you're like, what did I do wrong?
And I think Bob has that same sound in there. So I think it's... to me, this is the definitive version, so it's correct.
Nice. Okay, let's see what comes next. For the Zegs, the XE and XEGS...
XEGS. I picked a game that Atari published late in... So it's not an XEGS cartridge, because everybody knows about those. So I picked a game that was published by Atari. I can't see if this is by Atari or not. Yeah.
What's it
published called? In 1988 by Atari UK. It's a sideways version of sort of a... it's another version of a game that's like Outlaw, like we saw with Wall War. So it's like Wall War that was put out by Sierra in 1981 or 2 by Peter Oliphant, but it's sideways and it's sort of a Wall War style game. And it's really fun for two. So this game is called Nucleus, and it's very, very similar to Wall War that was put out by Sierra in 1982. But Nucleus is a 1988 Atari UK game, and it's for two players, like Outlaw, firing against one another. And one thing you really needed to get on these with the Atari was two people sitting down playing. And I think this was showing another game where if you had two people playing on Atari 800, it really couldn't be beat as a fun two-player game system.
Strike. You chose Desert Strike. This will be where I disagree with you. It's just okay version of Desert Strike.
Okay. No one talks about it, though.
No.
And it can't be emulated. So...
wow.
It can't be emulated. We've tried it before. It was not unemulatable. But if you have it on cartridge, it's fantastic to play.
Okay, I'll say that coming from loving the Genesis game, this one really kind of disappointed me a little bit. But I'll say that it is a hidden gem, and you and I bought a copy.
We have a copy of it.
Of it that we bought together. So I own half of it, in case you want to sell
it. You own half of it, Steve. I'm not going to sell it. Don't worry about it.
But it is weird. It's one I didn't even realize existed until last year.
This is why I put it here, actually, because we didn't even know it existed.
No.
And we bought it, and we tried to play it on the Lynx. The Lynx screen doesn't work, so I tried to emulate it. Emulation is not very good, but I've seen other people taking pictures of the screen of the Lynx one. It looks really
good.
Maybe
that's what I'm disappointed about, because I never got to play it. That's probably why I'm upset about it.
Could be.
Okay. Jaguar. Ooh, I like this one. You chose Chaos Engine.
Chaos Engine, which is... a Bitmap Brothers Atari ST port with upgraded music and sounds, not maybe from the Amiga, I'm not sure, but the sounds are great. So you get what the STE version of this should have been. The STE version did not have upgraded sounds, just had upgraded scrolling. So you get a nice, fast-scrolling Chaos Engine with better sounds, and it's fantastic. So this, to me, and I think it's approved by the Bitmap Brothers to be sold.
Oh,
so
nice.
I think Atari is just still selling it, but it's still a great version of the Chaos Engine.
Okay. And finally, the PC. I chose this one. I chose Microsoft Arcade from 1993. I was trying to get this to run yesterday for Windows 3.1. This is a remade version of 5 Atari Arcade games, Asteroid, Centipede, Missile Command, Battlezone, and Tempest, supposedly made because Bill Gates loved Tempest. Do you remember Microsoft Arcade?
I do. I love it. I still have a disc.
You have the disc? Oh, cool. Yeah, I tried to get it to run yesterday, but I found out that my WinDOS box has somehow been corrupted on my computer, so I couldn't.
Oh, after you set up those settings?
Maybe? Yeah.
Last time?
No, different. That's DOS box. WinDOS box I had for something else, and I had loaded.
Oh, that's right.
I had installed my version of Windows of my Windows 3.1 from floppy disk onto my computer. And I'd been moving it around for like 2 or 3 years, and somehow it got deleted. I had a hard drive crash last year. Maybe that was one of the things that went. A lot of things went that I didn't realize. So that was probably one of the things.
Yeah, this I remember being incredibly impressed with this, although I thought the frame rate was a little choppy. It was played at Windows 3.1.
Oh, it's in Windows 3.1.
So it still was fun, though. I think I played Asteroids on this forever. It was finally on the PC, I got an Asteroids that was as good as Megaroids on the ST.
It was fun. So that was, you know why we did that? You know, we found Atari Gems because I thought that the podcast was veering a little too far away from Atari for a while, so we came back to it this week.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about Atari this time.
Right. Okay, so this is going to be severely edited, and I don't even know if it's coming out on time, but we're going to leave the overscan, and we're also going to leave the...
out of the vertical blank? Well, no, we're leaving the overscan, going into the vertical blank very, very shortly.
And then leaving the vertical
blank. Into the vertical blank. Now, we're going out of the vertical blank.
Going out of the vertical blank now. All right. All right.
We still haven't taken a week off, and we said we're going to, so this is pretty good.
Yeah.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical
blank. We are the forgotten generation, a misplaced slice of the 20th century when birth rates were as low as expectations for the future. We lived under the threat of constant nuclear annihilation, playing outside, but always inherently knowing the future was indoors. We are the second half of Generation X. We were some of the first to play video games, to program home computers, and record CDs to cassette mixtapes. Our generation was nourished by new wave, imperfect punk rock, and John Hughes movies. We built Web 1.0 from the ground up using our childhood 8-bit and 16-bit programming skills. They call us Gen X. We prefer the vertical blank generation, where magic happens between the lines, because that's where we live, love, and thrive. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.
The vertical blank is the space between the last line of the current frame and the first line of the next, where off-screen calculations create a cathode ray tube display. Exist, literally, between the lines, invisible, yet all-seeing, in a void where magic occurs that is never seen, only experienced. The vertical blank is an omniscient force containing the nuances that make our nostalgia a reality. It's the transcendental location that holds our best memories, biggest joys, greatest fears, and our most terrible losses. You've been warned. You can stop this tape now, turn around, for once you enter, there may be no escape. All the scan lines have been written. It's time to enter the vertical blank.
Into the vertical blank.
Next frame calculated. Prepare to write new data. Blank ending.